League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
A radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Gallant. That's a G, yo, and George.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah!
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
Mixon, good cutback and a big lane. Mixon kicking on to the speed now, and Mixon out of bounds inside the 10. And now Mixon again sweeps the left side into the end zone for a Houston touchdown.
I am so glad that the Houston Texans have finally arrived at the bye week. I know they won yesterday, 23-20. A win is a win, even if it's against a now 10-loss team. I'm just thankful that we all get a break from this team. Hello and welcome aboard Gallant and George. It is Monday, December 2nd of 2024. I am Paul Gallant. He is Joe George. There were moments in this game where it looked like it could turn into a good old-fashioned whooping for the Texans. I unclenched momentarily in the fourth quarter, and then I was back to clenching for Mac effing Jones down the stretch. But I gotta accept that this is just who the Houston Texans are. They don't blow teams out, and we all got to accept it. Otherwise, we're just going to be miserable after every single victory going forward.
Yes, I very much agree with. This is who they are. This is who it's going to be. They're going to play the Chiefs close. They're going to play the Ravens close. I don't think they're going to get it blown out in those games. I think the Vikings game, when we look back at the season, will be the one that kind of stands out as the outlier. They're just not going to make anything easy. I mean, I'm with you. Like, you put it perfectly, Paul. Clenching and then unclenching.
They knocked Trevor Lawrence.
They killed him.
Out of the game, and somehow it actually was closer?
Well, because he wasn't healthy, first of all. He should never have been out there. You could tell he could not throw the ball very well. Yeah, Mac Jones
wasn't bad in this game.
This was like, what, like sophomore year, rookie year Mac Jones when he was a Pro Bowler all of a sudden? Like, going toe-to-toe with guys, shoulder first? Going to war?
Well, I mean, not athletically, because he is a soup sandwich, but he did make some key throws down the stretch, and thankfully, on 3rd and 5, a rather sus play call, a handoff to Joe Mixon gets the Texans 8 yards, and they can get in the victory formation, getting to the bye week at 8-5. And look, I know a lot of other things happened across the league yesterday that maybe make you feel a little bit better about the Texans going forward. I point to the Ravens losing rather emphatically to the Philadelphia Eagles. You could also point to the Buffalo Bills killing the San Francisco 49ers and ending Christian McCaffrey's season and say, well, we beat those guys. So you could do that if you want. I'm not doing that. I'm just happy that we all get a week away. They need the bye week, but we need this bye week way more. Way, 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 way more than they do.
Yeah, we need to be less stressed.
Everyone is angry online talking about this team. I was talking to a couple of friends. They were asking me, hey, Paul, did you get into any kerfuffles talking about this mediocre football team that happens to lead the worst division in the NFL? And yes, it happened. DJ and I got into it over the definition of an underthrow.
I saw that.
Which is when a ball does not reach a receiver, it is underthrown. I don't care if it's 70 yards or 5 yards. It is underthrown. But everyone is mad at each other. And here I am, talking about a victory, being angry. Deep breaths, accept it. This is who they are.
It is. It's who they are, and who they are is winning games that they should probably lose. Like that's the reality, Paul. They shouldn't have won yesterday's game. They at least should have gone to overtime. Jacksonville, they missed a field goal.
They did.
So it could have been 23-23.
It was a long field goal.
It was.
But they did miss it.
Yeah. I mean, you let this team come back against you in the fourth quarter. Your second half woes turned into first half woes on offense. But at least they scored in the second half.
They did.
They scored in the second half.
I like that you're transitioning us to talk about the positives, because there actually were some steps forward in this game that was still very frustrating, despite it being victory number 8 for this team. The offensive line was better. They were. And here is CJ Stroud talking about that offensive line after yesterday's game at Everbank Field in Jacksonville, Florida.
There are everything, you know. It starts up front, both O-line and D-line. And, you know, when they can come out and have great protection, you know, from the start, it gives me a sense of confidence. It gives the receivers knowing that they can run their full depth. The backs know where to hit, you know, and once you get that flowing, it looks like it's working. But, you know, I think they've done a good job by handling all the noise and the media and all these things, because at the end of the day, one time, they'll love you 1 week and hate you the next. That's part of the business we're in. So I think they've done a great job of just keeping their head down and working.
Well, hey, there's a first for everything, and CJ's talking about loving the offensive line 1 week, hating them the next. Fine, I love the offensive line. I love them in the way a father loves a son who's a disappointment, which is probably my father with me, given my sister went to Harvard and is a surgeon, and I'm just some idiot who blabs for a living. But for the first time this year, CJ, you're right. There is some love for the offensive line. Now, would I say that the offensive line is the Houston Texans' everything? Because CJ said there are everything. No. No, I wouldn't do that. But they did play better yesterday. Joe Mixon actually had 100-plus yards on the ground. And they only allowed 2 sacks against a Jaguars pass rush that does have some names.
Yeah, I mean, CJ was the one that told us that, you know, you win and lose by how your offensive line plays. He told us that last week, and then he tried to walk it back a little bit. So that's why they're the everything, Paul. Because you win and lose by your offensive line. That's what the quarterback says. You know, they did a good job adjusting, especially in the run game. The run game was terrible in the first half. But the second half of the game, Joe Mixon did a lot of the work. Yes, mm-hmm. Can't deny that. He was incredible again. A-plus trade by Nick Caserio. Or a 7th-round pick to make that move has worked out so well for this team. But they were much better in the second half run blocking as well, which is that's a huge improvement. And if you look at the nerdy Pro Football Focus stats, they graded out really well, except for one guy. Like, Drew Scruggs is the only one who had a really bad grade in this game. C.J. Stroud had tons of time to throw. There were multiple plays where it felt like he was just back there forever. So, I do give kudos to the offensive line. Joshua Hines-Allen's good.
He is. Stroud did look a little tentative back there a couple of times, but he didn't turn the football over, which you also like to see. And you're right, Joe, about how in the first half, they couldn't run the ball worth a damn. They really couldn't. There was nowhere for them to go. And I thought that they were just going to avoid running the football completely, given the way that things were shaking out in the first half. I wouldn't have blamed them. Just the way things have gone the last couple of weeks, the nerds have actually been enabled. The people that believe you should never run the football, which doesn't work. You want your offensive linemen to be going forward as much as they're going backward. It's really about like offensive line making it an easier day for them. You got defensive linemen running into you as you're backpedaling every single down of every single game. They're going to get worn out, and you're going to end up looking like you're cramping, like all those Texas A&M Aggies did in the second half against Texas. We'll get into that game at 12:30. We'll also talk about a big win for the Houston Rockets last night. There were some positives. The defense did leave a little bit to be desired in this one, though. And, I mean, this is the strength of your team, the defense, the pass rush in particular. No sacks. And, okay, Trevor Lawrence, he can move. Maybe he can't slide, but he can move. Mac Jones, no sacks against him. I get that he gets the ball out quickly, but I was disappointed in the Texans' pass rush today. Yesterday. But they do end up getting out of this with a W. And I suppose I should take the little victories, even though it's a win by 3 points, barely, over a 10-loss team.
Yeah, and you look at the last 2 weeks now, you can say, well, they had 8 sacks last week, or you could do the pessimistic view would be they've had 1 sack in the last 6 quarters. So the last 6 quarters of football, like, they've really struggled to get after the quarterback. And this isn't a great offensive line, for Jacksonville. I mean, this is a team that traded away one of its, you know, one of its offensive linemen to the Minnesota Vikings at the trade deadline. So they didn't get to the quarterback. It also, and not just that they didn't get to the quarterback, it didn't really feel like they were under a ton of pressure as well in this game. The biggest positive might be, of all the injuries that happened in the game, it seems like they've come out okay. I mean, we saw Nico, Dalton Schultz, Jimmy Ward all leave the game at some point, and Jimmy Ward returned and then got hurt again. So at least Dalton Schultz and Nico Collins returned, because I thought Nico Collins was definitely going to be out for the game. Mm-hmm. The way he grabbed his head, I was like, oh, he's done. Like, that's concussion protocol 101. But as they, you know, they gave us the sideline report that the team cheered as he left the blue tent to grab his helmet, which was an interesting sideline report itself.
In fact, it was a made-up sideline report. Let's be honest here. Yes. I don't know what Laura Oakman was seeing.
I don't either.
I don't know why they threw her under the bus like that, too, on the CBS broadcast, as she talks about how Nico Collins came out of the tent. Fabulous! It's me, Nico! She basically described him coming out like a gay man about to walk out onto the runway at a fashion show.
But as they showed it...
Hello, everybody! I'm happy, and my brain works!
Like, as they showed it, he's just, like, walking and smiling, and, like, no one acknowledges him. It's very strange.
I saw no thumbs up. Whatever. Yeah, you're right.
Very strange.
They did come out of this game healthy, and if you want to be proud of it, you can. D'Amico Ryans, to open up the press conference after the game, said that he was proud of the Texans for winning this game.
I'm really proud of it, the way our guys just played complimentary football. Right, that's been a struggle for us in the games that we've dropped. So just seeing everybody step up and make a play when the other side wasn't doing so well, like everybody played together. And that's what's most impressive about this win, and none other than when we need a first down, seeing our offense being able to run the ball there on third and five to get the first down. Our O-line, I thought they did a really great job all game with protection and also just run blocking. And Joe, again, another big game on the road, running the football. Like, really just proud of the effort that all of our guys showed today.
This is Texans football. And look, Mixon had 100-plus, no sacks for C.J. Stroud. The offensive line did take a step forward, but, and this is where I'm frustrated and why I need a bye week with this team. First play of the game, the offensive line allows a free rusher to hit C.J. Stroud right in the tum-tum. Joe, I thought at that moment in time, Stroud might be injured. And the first drive of the game, it's third down. Stroud hits Nico Collins for a first down. And it's the little things once again. I didn't know that an offensive player could be called for offsides. And yet, Cade Stover was called for offsides in a year where big plays by Nico Collins have been called back by illegal shifts and illegal formations. Add another one to the bingo card. Those things that happened over the course of this game, the little things, do not seem to be cleaned up. And what we're going to discuss next, Azeez Al-Shaair's hit on Trevor Lawrence. One, was it dirty? Two, was it a reflection of D'Amico Ryans maybe not being, I guess, as disciplinary, is that a word? As much of a disciplinarian as some would like to see him as a head coach. We'll discuss that. He's Joe. I'm Paul. You got Sean behind the glass. It is Gallant and George, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
Oh, there's no doubt that Trevor represents that. Oh my, that'll be Al-Shaair, who's flagged for the big hit on the slide, and that's going to start a little bit of a scrum afterwards as the Jaguars come in to protect their QB.
About 4 minutes left in the second quarter. Trevor Lawrence on, I believe, second down, scrambles out of the pocket, rolls to his left, and right before where the first down marker would have been, he begins to slide. Texans linebacker Azeez Al-Shaair continues moving forward towards Trevor Lawrence, puts his right forearm at the very top of Trevor Lawrence's chest, shoves him backwards as he is already sliding with his body going backwards. His head slams into the field, and the first thing that happens is we see Trevor Lawrence's hands fence. In the moment, it looked about as violent as you will see anything look on a football field, Joe.
It was a gnarly hit. Definitely feel for Trevor Lawrence. He's fine. He's even starting to engage with people on social media, it appears. He went after Patrick Storm a little bit earlier today, it looks like, from Texans Twitter. Because he said, I'm sure you're a great role model for your son because of a tweet that he put out. So Trevor Lawrence is alive.
Okay.
Which is a good thing.
He's fighting back. Against the online bullies.
But look, it was a hard hit. You can argue it's dirty. It's definitely illegal. I mean, that we know. I don't really know what Aziz is supposed to do in these situations, though. I think that's why it's complicated. I'm not surprised to see the anger, the vitriol from non-Texans fans out there. Like, any quarterback that gets hit like this, we're going to react severely to. I get it. But what is he supposed to do in that moment? He has a half a second to realize that Trevor Lawrence is sliding, that as he's trying to, you know, get enough yards before he slides to get the first down. Like, do we want players to just allow their opponents to get first downs?
If he hadn't used a forearm, if he had just used his hands and pushed him back, I feel like we're talking about this a little bit differently. But this isn't the Matrix. Defensive players have it really tough out there. This is not me saying that Aziz Alshaier did the right thing here. I do think, given the situation, that it wasn't a smart play. It wasn't. It's second down. This is not a goal-to-go situation. The game isn't about to end. It's not the playoffs. Was it necessary in that moment? But Aziz Alshaier plays 100 miles per hour all the time. We've seen him with hits of Tony Pollard on the sideline against the Titans. We have seen it with the hit on Caleb Williams on the sidelines in Sunday Night Football. Then he pops a Bears player because they all surrounded him. You've got a moment where he comes in late on Josh Allen. Allen's already going down awkwardly. I don't think he had much of an impact there, but he always goes 100 miles per hour. The forearm to the top of the shoulder pad made it look a lot worse. What the field did to Trevor Lawrence's head is worse than what Alshaier did to Lawrence. I'm not trying to defend Alshaier here again. I think there's a time and place for everything, and I don't think it was necessary in that moment. I think he could have just come in and cleaned up the play by putting two hands on him as opposed to the shove. Because it was a hard forearm shove. It wasn't just a light little tap. But the reaction to this is as if it is one of the worst hits that we've ever seen. I would disagree. Just yesterday, I saw online replays of Kiko Alonso with the Miami Dolphins at the time, basically decapitating Joe Flacco, going in, putting his shoulder into Flacco's helmet. Helmet rolls off down the field. And of course, I've brought this one up before. I have no idea how Tom Brady stayed in the game of it. But in a game between the Patriots and Bills back in 2001, Tom Brady is scrambling and a Bills safety comes in and decapitates him. The helmet goes rolling down the field. They didn't even throw a flag on that. Different era. And you have to understand that since it is a different era, you got to be smart there. But I feel like the reaction to that hit was very strong and a little bit hyperbolistic.
I totally agree. I mean, the first one that came to my mind was the Bengals-Steelers game in which we saw two hits that were worse than what we saw yesterday. Vontaze Burfict first, when he pretty much probably sent Antonio Brown down the path that he's been on. But then Juju Smith-Schuster responded with the blindside hit against him a couple plays later. It's an illegal hit, of course. 100%. Is he going to get fined? Yes. Is he going to get suspended? Sounds like it. Adam Schefter reported that today, apparently. And you look at the clips where there's the play where he puts his hand around Tom Brady's throat, the plays that you mentioned. There is a track record here a little bit.
He's a habitual line stepper, to quote, I believe, Charlie Murphy in Chappelle's Show.
But at the end of the day, the problem is that the rules suck for the defensive players. So, yes, this is an illegal hit. Yes, you can argue it's dirty. But the problem is that when you can, all you have to do is go to Jeremy Branham's Twitter feed right now because he can't stop tweeting about it and tweeting out videos. Whether it's back in college when Kenny Pickett was running down the field and he did the fake slide, or earlier this season where Patrick Mahomes faked going out of bounds.
Josh Allen did it against the Steelers.
Exactly. Like these quarterbacks can do whatever they want, and it puts the defensive players in terrible positions. Because think about this one. What if Trevor Lawrence did a fake slide and then takes off down the field past Azeez Al-Shaair because Azeez totally pulls up on the play? Like, it's a bad hit. There needs to be a way to take it out of the game, but maybe taking the play out of the game should start with the quarterbacks, not sliding like this. Like, it happens all the time. We see quarterbacks get hit when they're sliding. Almost every single game, a quarterback slides. And we've seen CJ take these hits. The defensive players can't stop when a quarterback slides far too often.
Quarterbacks are more athletic and running more than they ever have before. And I think back in the day, a quarterback giving up on a play makes a little more sense when the guys are a lot slower. Because a lot of quarterbacks back in the day were just pocket guys. I mean, honestly, there was a time where John Elway was the most mobile of quarterbacks in the NFL, which is pretty crazy to think of. You go to today, and everyone is running. And I think that now you got to think about it from this perspective if you're the league. And I know they won't do this because they want to protect the quarterbacks by all means necessary. These are the money makers. But what protects a player more? Is it sliding in a sport where everyone is flying around the field, or is it putting your shoulder into a linebacker when you're 6'5", 220, 230 pounds? And I know there are some small quarterbacks out there, but it is strange to me that there is no risk for a quarterback taking off and running. There should be a little bit of risk there. Why are quarterbacks any different from any player on the field? Why are there separate rules for a quarterback running with the football than there are for anybody else? And that, to me, is what bothers me. I will again go back to this Azeez Al-Shaair play and say it wasn't good judgment. You can, if you want to, I saw Lance Zierlein put this out there, suggest that this is a reflection of D'Amico's coaching and that he has been doing this all year and it was always going to come to a moment like this that could cost the Houston Texans. Fair point, fair argument to make. But I don't think it was as dirty as it's being made out to be. And I think that the NFL's got to seriously reconsider what should be allowed when it comes to a player giving up on a play. I get it. Sliding, the guy's moving forward. Theoretically, that is going to protect him. But I don't know how much it does. And I've been of the belief, and I've said this in a joking way many times before, I don't think a player should be able to slide. I don't think a player should be able to give up on a play. And hell, I sometimes don't even believe a player should be able to run out of bounds. Call that toxic masculinity or just hardo meat-headed douchery, whatever you want. But I feel like if you got a football in your hands, you should be trying to get every single yard that you possibly can. And in a sport where the defenders already, every single year, have one more rule added to the long list of ways that they cannot tackle a player. You got the hip drop tackle thing, which no one actually can explain to you if you were to put them on the spot as a problem this year that they added to the rule book. Now you got this situation going on. Al-Shaair should have been smarter and just put Tua and touched him, just given the stakes, but this is not Myles Garrett smashing Mason Rudolph in the head with a helmet.
Totally agree. This isn't things that Ndamukong Suh has done in the past. It's a
Albert Haynesworth,
great example. Like it's a bad play. It shouldn't have happened. It's not intelligent. You have to avoid this. If he is suspended, he's going to hurt his team because of this. But I just don't think it's a simple black and white issue. Like it is a gray area that people are way overreacting to be honest, because it's Trevor Lawrence. And like, how would we react to this if it was like a pure running quarterback?
Oh, don't do that. Don't do that. I know where you're going.
Man, I watched it for 4 years.
You just said it's a black and white. It's not a black and white issue.
Well, I'll just continue then. look, I hate, I'm sorry to bring it up because I know people get annoyed, but like, I watched it for 3 years. I watched Justin Fields slide like this for 3 years and get pummeled every single time he slid. And no flags were ever called.
Because he sucks.
Lamar Jackson. We see it. If he slides like this, it's different because he's an MVP. There's different rules for every quarterback. We all know that. If you're a rookie, you get calls. If you're a veteran, you get calls. If you're a running quarterback, you get calls. If you're not a running quarterback, you get different calls. Like, there's no consistency. So I don't know what the defensive players are supposed to do. He shouldn't have done it. Yes. But if the NFL wants to fix this problem, then you have to define what is and what isn't allowed on the field, and your referees have to stand for something. If Aziz is going to be suspended, that's fine. That's your decision.
I don't think it is because of precedent, but
continue. No, I'm with you. Because the precedent is that he shouldn't be fine. He shouldn't be suspended. But if he's going to get suspended because he has somewhat of a history, then every single player who does this going forward has to be suspended. It's just like the hip drop tackle. What happened? Joe Mixon against the Bears got hip drop tackled. What happened? An undisclosed fine that we don't even know.
Like, they're not even flagged in the moment either.
Exactly. Not flagged. What did it solve? So, like, people can get all up in arms about Aziz and the play, and you can call him dirty and whatnot. But, like, the fact of the matter is the NFL doesn't know how to police its own football game. They want to put out rules, and they're different for every single play and every different quarterback and every different committee of referees. So, mm-hmm. I don't know what he's supposed to do because it's football.
I know what Trevor Lawrence is supposed to do. He should do what Lamar Jackson did to that player on one of his scrambles. He should jump up in the air and kick him in the face. That actually happened. That actually happened in the game. I saw some people trying to pull the, well, Trevor Lawrence got this call and the reaction is what it is because he's a white quarterback. No, the reaction isn't what it is because his head hit the ground hard and he fenced afterwards.
Yes.
It looked really bad and everyone did feel bad for that moment. For a moment, forgetting that they are watching the most violent sport that there is that is played with balls in the United States of America.
The fencing's really what did it in. Probably the overreaction. Because like we've seen this with just Tua as an example of just normal concussions. Tua gets a concussion, he fences, everyone freaks out. Nico Collins grabs his head in pain and no one cares. It's just the hypocrisy of watching football. That like if a player fences, we react in a way that is an overreaction to everything else. Mm-hmm. Because it's scary in the moment. For sure.
Yeah, and it's like the physical like embodiment of like what a brain injury is, because it's like, oh God, he just lost control of his body. Like he got hit in the head and can no longer use his limbs temporarily. Like that, because that when we just say, oh yeah, Nico Collins went into the blue tent with a concussion, and it's like, oh, okay, he'll be fine. Maybe he's out for the rest of the game, but he's ultimately going to be fine. But when you see like, oh no, this is like Tua with the messed up fingers on Thursday Night Football, that's like, this is actually, it makes you feel uncomfortable with what we're watching. And so, yeah, I think that's where a lot of the hyperbole came afterwards. John McClain said that he's been covering the NFL for 48 years. He's never seen a cheap shot worse than what Al Shaair did.
That's bull.
What?
That's just completely wrong. Like
I've been watching football for a weekend.
I love Chubb. That's an insane thing to say.
Jack Tatum paralyzed the guy in a preseason game and then wrote a book about it. Okay, I know John McClain was covering the NFL then. He wrote a book called "Call Me Assassin." Jack Tatum, one of the all-time a-holes in NFL history, may he burn wherever the hell he is. He's probably just dead and gone forever. But you get what I'm saying here?
Yeah. You don't even need to go like the Kiko Alonso one, like. That was HD cameras that got that yes. one. Like, it's, you don't even have to go to, like, the, you know, here comes the boom, you just got jacked up era of football. It's like, no, there's cheaper shots, like, throughout, like, this football season.
McClain doing some good engagement farming.
Okay? Great engagement farming. And I don't mean to pick on John, but, like, that is what the reaction was like, oh, my God, we've never seen anything like that. And I think the reaction by Trevor Lawrence, the involuntary reaction by Trevor Lawrence with the fencing, and then the afterwards, the fracas that happened, where it's just normal. I mean, I think the Jags are right to do that.
I agree. Like, I stand with the Jaguars doing that. That was awesome. They defended their quarterback.
And I think that's what kind of blows this out of proportion, is just like those two factors make it seem like this is some big deal, where the play itself is not like some unheard of thing in football.
Lawrence didn't die, and I felt like his teammates delivered some good old-fashioned street justice in that moment. The one thing that was a problem was that for whatever reason, there are offsetting penalties, and they did not give the Jaguars 15 more yards for unnecessary roughness. I couldn't believe that happened. Yeah. It was like, wait, it's second, it's third and one? What?
It feels like if there's offsetting post-snap penalties.
That makes sense.
But a penalty in the play, that should be different.
It should have been 15 yards.
It should have been 15 yards.
Look, I'm truly glad Lawrence is okay. That did look bad.
It was scary.
But there's a lot of hyperbole afterwards, and part of it has to do with this guy did go to Syracuse University, but he is not known for his time as a Syracuse University play-by-play man or anything like that. No, we're talking about Daryl Moose Johnson. who was the color commentator for this game. I think this lent itself to some of the reaction afterwards. Here is the Moose.
A brutal hit from Azeez Alshire.
It's everything you're not supposed to do. Everything. You'll see this in slow motion. And Azeez Alshire does everything you're trying to prevent in this situation. It's reckless. It's disrespectful. There's an honor that you give to your opponent on the football field. And you respect him. And there's opportunities to be physical and give big hits and play this game in that manner. And there's other times when there's a respect that you grant to your opponent. And especially in the situation with Trevor Lawrence and that shoulder injury.
D'Amico Ryan's out there now saying to Azeez Alshire, get to the sideline.
Get to the sideline so you can go up the tunnel and get off the field.
And you're going to see it again.
I mean, this is just everything. Shoulder, he's in the sliding posture.
There's a launch.
You raise the forearm. You go to the head and neck area.
You got the cameras in front of him.
There's an opportunity to pull off.
Is there? I'll show the replay again. So there you go. You get the point here. The broadcast, I think, added to the reaction that we saw online, which, of course, in Houston was going to be, hey, 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 wait a second. And everywhere else is going to be, F that guy, who is a habitual line stepper. Azeez Alshire has not made himself any friends with some of the stuff that he's done, and it's why a lot of people were quick to find old clips of Alshire doing that habitual line stepping. And he is escorted off the field by Will Anderson. Shout out to Will Anderson, great teammate. Gets drilled in the helmet by a water bottle. Doesn't even react. Now, of course, it's because he's wearing a helmet. Alshire got pissed off about it. Anderson's like, hey, dude, stop. Just get off the field. Because that was for Alshire's own safety. That whole Jaguars team would have tried to kill him the entire rest of the game. It was smart of the refs with everything that happened to reject him. We got back to playing a football game. After that happened, I felt like they did the most that they could after that all went down. But the online reaction and the broadcasting reaction of something that was literally a forearm to an upper chest that led to a guy who was sliding with his weight going forward and unless he has the strongest abs in the world, like you're going backwards. You cannot just stay up at a obtuse angle as you slide. That hit to the upper left chest of Lawrence is going to result in Lawrence going backwards and hitting his head on the ground very hard. The field did more to Trevor Lawrence than Azeez Alshire. Hashtag free Azeez Alshire.
The problem that I have with the broadcast is that they are taking way too much liberty in talking about, you know, pulling off of the hit while watching this play in slow motion.
Yeah.
Like as they're talking about it in that clip we just played, they have it in slow motion and they're breaking it down. They are not breaking this down in real time at any point during that entire moment. They are looking at it from a frame-by-frame clip, which is totally a different picture than what actually happened. If you want to break it frame-by-frame, then Azeez should be suspended probably for the rest of the season.
No.
No.
If you want to do frame-by-frame, that's the only way. If it's the only way you want to look at it, it looks like the dirtiest play on the planet.
Like, it is the dirtiest play that John McClain's ever seen in his life.
It's the dirtiest play that we saw in those 3 hours. I'm sure that there was something worse that happened on the weekend. Like, remember when the Notre Dame player punched a guy in the effing face in the USC game?
Just go, Riley!
He literally just punched him!
Just cocked back.
Boom! Right to the face mask. Yeah. Which, again, he's wearing a helmet.
First of all, stupid play. Like, no injuries. Playoffs, here we come. Like, don't break your hand. I know you'll play for 3 weeks, but like, don't be breaking your hand there. Yeah, it's not the dirtiest thing we've seen this season.
Pull up some Moose Johnson highlights. Bet we see some dirty stuff.
My favorite was Ryan Clark.
Oh, yeah, right.
By far. My favorite was Ryan
and
Clark.
Yeah, he has the mistake of talking about playing in HD, in the HD era. He played too recently to get off the, like, there's just some things you don't do as an NFL player. And everyone's like, is this you paralyzing the entire AFC
he
North?
He killed Wes Welker.
Ryan Clark has gotten too big for his own good to the point where I think he believes he is always right. And, yeah, I might be a little bit biased because I got into a back and forth with him when he was clearly shilling for David Mulugeta, who he has a cozy relationship with, super agent David Mulugeta. But Clark's gotten to a point where I feel like he's unquestionable. He's putting out these tweets like, you don't have to respect the president, and I don't respect the president, but I do respect the office of the president. It's like stuff like that. It's like, okay, dude, you really are feeling yourself a little bit too much. Might be time for a reality check or two, like the fact that you did this when you played.
Yes.
I don't know. Just a thought. Just a thought.
Within, like, the last decade.
Yes! Now, maybe he forgot it.
Again, easily accessible highlights. Like, I get looking up, like, 90s and, like, the last 48 years of football to find a dirtier hit. Like, going way back in the archives is hard. Ryan Clark, like, I remember watching Ryan Clark play.
His montage is worse than Aziz's montage.
His montage is a bunch of stuff you just cannot do anymore.
Yeah. From the 409, you homers are hilarious. It was 100% dirty and suspension worthy. Look, the dirty, debatable. I am not going to assign intent there. I am someone who believes that defenders should have the same rights as offensive players. I can understand how someone looks at Aziz Alshayer's entire track record and says, it was a dirty play. And you can throw that out there. But Kiko Alonso did not get suspended for a much worse hit on Joe Flacco, which we saw and I believe was in a night game in primetime television. This wasn't in the Texans-Jaguars window. Schefter saying that he's going to get suspended is surprising to me because I don't think it should be a suspension.
I think the suspension is mostly after the play. I think it's
for the fighting.
Yeah, the fighting and not just getting off the field. But I just think that plays a part into it of like he was just clearly out of control.
But Evan Engram was the one who did escalate it. And again, justified. I think what Evan Engram did going after Alshayer right away was 100% justified, as was all those other Jaguars players. I think the guy who got ejected from the Jaguars was a defensive back who punched somebody out there because things escalated the way that they did. And it was really funny, like the people that were not involved with it at all getting involved. Yeah. I felt like the Texans, from a composure perspective, like did a good job of not getting all dragged into it. I think most of the players were more concerned about getting Aziz Alshayer, who did lose his mind, out of there. Alshayer being indignant about the reaction he was getting from the Jaguars, that was crazy.
Or just the still frame of him putting his arms out when the ref throws the flag and just being like, what'd I do?
Right.
That is a funny one.
Right.
He is a little of a little concerning going forward.
He punched a running back on the sideline.
Like, yeah.
So maybe that part of it merits a suspension. I really think it should just be a big fine. If this is in a different situation, I feel like a lot more people would be on his side. Like, say it's a playoff game and he's going for a first down on a third down. Say it's in the red zone or something like that. It's a totally different situation, and this is just a byproduct of there's more mobile quarterbacks out there, and they are coddled to a point where they can now do some shady stuff and fake a slide and get away with it. That's what's frustrating to a lot of people who like defensive football, like myself, and others.
I was gonna say, everyone talks about like, oh, NFL soft these days. They don't do it. Like, they complain about all the new rules, and then they like, oh, here's a play that would have been totally fine like 15 years ago, and it's the worst hit that you've seen in 48 years. It's like crazy. It's honestly insane that like you said, it was a forearm to the chest of a player. And if Trevor Lawrence's head doesn't slap against the field, we're probably just moving on. There's probably a little bit of like, hey, don't do that to my quarterback, whatever. And no one gets fined, or maybe he gets fined, but you don't get suspended or anything. We're not talking about that. It's just the fact of he hit him too hard, and that's what really caused the whole issue.
100%. Flag football. Let's just do it. That's where we're headed.
Yeah, no, Moose Johnson wants it. Like
very clearly.
The voice of days gone by, a former fullback, thinks that hit was too hard.
A dark day for fullbacks.
Imagine like what his response would have been when Trent Green tried to blindside block Travis Johnson and got knocked unconscious, and then Travis Johnson just like stood over yelling at him. Like, imagine what Daryl Johnson's response would have been.
I love Travis Johnson immediately. Like, Travis Johnson was the first person into the frame. I love Travis. He is an awesome dude. Travis being the first one to step online into the fray as the one defending Azeez Al-Shaair, loved it.
Yeah,
because a lot of people took their sweet time, myself included, because I wrote a couple of different things. I watched a bunch of different replays. I took a while to actually have my official take on it, because I remember seeing it in the moment, I was like, oh, that's bad. And then I saw the slow motion, I was like, well, and that's how it goes.
It's like a normal, like, that's a 15-yard penalty. Like, that is just, like, it is how the rules are set up. Like, that's a penalty. It's not anything more than that, in my eyes.
Sean Mapes behind the glass, Joe George to my right. I am Paul Gallant. Gallant and George, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Up next, oh boy, Aggies. I think you guys need a rebrand. I will explain why next. Stay put.
Let's talk about OU Athletic, 767 North Shepherd in the Heights, OUathletic.com and OU Athletic on Instagram. They offer over 100 classes per week. They start off early in the morning. They pick back up around 4:30. So you can go right after your workday ends, hit the gym, and then get home to your family or whatever you have to do the rest of the day. Don't wait till 2025 to start working on your goals. Get to OU Athletic. Sign up for a personal trainer. I recommend Cam. He's who I work out with. Absolutely great dude and has set me up on a path for success in the gym. Check him out, OUathletic.com and OU Athletic on Instagram.
You are back with Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul and Joe.
Pressure comes, he spins free, and it'll be knocked down. Ball is out, Texas falls on it. It's Vernon Broughton, who's had a monster night, who makes the recovery that should secure Texas's spot in the championship game.
I know the final score was 17-7, but the final reunion between Texas and Texas A&M Saturday night, that was so one-sided. I mean, Texas kicked Texas A&M's ass. I don't think you can beat around the bush here. I felt like Texas left a lot of points on the table, and honestly, the only reason Texas A&M scored was because of a weird sidearm throw that Quinn Ewers made. This could have been a 31-0 blowout, Joe. And it's cool to see the rivalry back, but I have questions about it as a whole.
Yeah, it was fun that it was back. It looked like an incredible environment. I had hardcore FOMO watching this game, wishing I was there.
Would you really want to be there?
Yes and no.
I mean, you had FOMO, so yes and no? Is it yes or no?
It's yes, I want to be there. No, I don't want to leave with all those people. Now, but they did leave early, so it might not have been as bad.
Oh, there it is.
Well, they did.
They did leave early.
I mean, the 12th man prides themselves on not leaving early, and they left early.
Texas A&M needs a rebrand. The beginning of the game, it was an electric atmosphere. Everyone's waving the towel. The Aggies come on the field. It looked electric. And then they sang the Aggie War Hymn, and it seemed like they skipped the first verse. I'll be honest, I never cared to look up the lyrics to the Aggie War Hymn, but for whatever reason, ESPN decided we're going to show the lyrics to the Aggie War Hymn as they are sung. And I had no idea that the entire War Hymn is about Texas.
Yeah, I didn't know that either.
And I think that might have been why they skipped the first verse for this game in particular. But it could not have been more little brother than that. I mean, the whole second verse is goodbye to Texas University. So long to the orange and the white. Good luck to dear old Texas Aggies. They are the boys that show the real old fight. The eyes of Texas are upon you. That is the song they sing so well. So you're singing about their fight song in the middle of your fight song. So goodbye to Texas University. We're going to beat you all too. And then they have their gibberish And then they have a dated reference to the original Texas mascot, Varsity. Saw Varsity's horn off, and they do the thing back and forth, which I did not know was supposed to be like a saw motion. We're not going to get to the outro, which apparently is racist. Look, if you don't want to be the little brother, you got to do a rebrand, okay? If you don't want to be Texas 8-4, you got to do a rebrand. You got to do a rebrand here. Yeah. There's just something so little brother about that whole endeavor. And I can understand now, after having watched this game, why Texas, who secretly hates Texas A&M more than anyone, doesn't like to officially recognize Texas A&M as a rival. Because it really is a big brother, little brother thing.
Yeah, I still think going back to week one, like being there in College Station, it's so strange to me. So it's like watching this game play out, thinking of all the Aggie fans putting the horns down up during a game against Notre Dame. All of it's so strange to me. You got to win this game if you're going to be talking like this all season.
You have to show up.
Or be competitive.
I mean, Mike Elko's pooping his pants out there half the game. Mike Elko looked awful. He looked awful. He called timeouts twice out of bewilderment. The first time was when all of a sudden Texas brought in Arch Manning for a red zone package for the second time. And then right after the timeout is called, Arch Manning goes right back to the sideline. The second time he called it is right before the fourth and goal that they get stuffed for. It was as if he thought to himself, I don't know. Oh, God. Oh. I mean, you knew you were going for it on fourth and goal there. You're at the 1 yard line. You haven't done anything on offense all game. This is the best chance you're going to get to score a touchdown on offense. You're going for it. Why are you calling a timeout? Yeah. You needed that timeout. They needed it.
Yeah, Colin Klein, the offense coordinator, I think left a lot to be desired for Texas A&M this weekend. No, Marcel Reed has been a fun story this year. I would not be shocked if this kid who is reclassifying from 2026 to 2025, Brady Hart, who flipped from Michigan to Texas A&M, isn't just like their starting quarterback next year, because maybe he can throw the ball a little bit. I wanted more from this game. I feel like this game was a letdown, to be honest. Like it felt like the environment was cool, but you're right.
I just want to rebrand. That's all I want. One of my Aggie buddies just texted me, bleep you, literally just now. I don't blame him. I'm not trying to rub it in here. I'm just saying there needs to be some sort of a rebrand, because for the game to finally be back, it's awesome. But the war hymn, like maybe have the first verse first and then the second verse if you're gonna allow them to put the captions
subtitles,
up on the TV,
the karaoke sing along.
Exactly.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
I mean, it was. I'm glad it's back. It was a nice end to the weekend. Like all the chaos of what happened Friday, Saturday, having that rivalry game back. Like I'm so glad it's back now. I like its placement on Saturday. I think I would prefer it on Black Friday, even over Thanksgiving. But it's tough for the Aggies to be in the SEC for 13 years and not go to an SEC title game, and Texas goes in its first year. Yeah. That's tough.
It is tough.
That's really tough.
Very tough. I think it got too hyped up, honestly. I think the like environment, like with, like you said, like ESPN and ABC like showing the entire walkout, which they do for most of these big time games. They throwing the lyrics up on the, like it was putting a lot on like this environment where, you know, it's the, I mean, how many times, this has been pent up. It's like, how many times last week did I hear like, oh, you think they're going to go into Kyle Field and win? That's all Texas does is go into Kyle Field and win since 1999.
You
that's all they
A&M
do.
To cover.
That's all they do. That's all they do is they go, that's reverse jinx, my friend. Maybe you should learn a thing or two.
I know.
Mr. Pick the Texans every week. I also pick the Texans. But like, Texas A&M has two wins at Kyle Field. Since 1999.
Over Texas?
Wow. Over Texas.
Not great.
The last one, the one that we showed 10 million highlights of, the one that is basically Justin Tucker's deal with the devil, because now he stinks because Texas and Texas A&M play again. He was only good when they didn't play. That one was a crappy Texas team that went into Kyle Field and won. Yeah. The last game that was going to be on the schedule forever. Like, you can make the same, like, this is a big game. You think Texas A&M wants to lose the last one that they'll play? No, they don't want to lose it, but they can't help it. Like, just the 109,000 people there, like, that's not enough, guys. You're going to have to figure it out on the field. You're going to have a quarterback who, at one point, he was slow to get up, and I was doing the classic, I actually don't want him to get hurt. I want him still in the game
because
they cannot throw the ball. They just will not throw the ball.
Did you see Wigman after the game? God, I felt bad for that. Wigman's walking around like it's the end of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air in all of his pads while no one is at Kyle Field, like walking around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also got scapegoated for this offense that sucks.
Yeah,
Colin Klein can't beat Texas as a coach. When he was the Kansas State OC, he just never beat Texas.
Man, I imagine that the worst part of this game for Aggies fans isn't even the end result. It's the Arch Manning touchdown. Just knowing that, like, maybe it's only one more year, but potentially his career's been so weird. Maybe he'll be there for two more years, but knowing that next year you're going to have to face an athletic Manning.
Yeah.
Not great.
It's like the Marvel, like here's what's coming up next. It's the post-credit scene of like, oh, God.
His first play in the rivalry was a touchdown. And I saw Corey Mose, University of Texas, he covers the football beat there, basically said, like, a guy with this much culture, problem.
A lot of coded language.
A Manning with this much culture,
coded language with the Arch Manning celebrations. Yeah.
Galana George, Joe, Sean, me, Paul, 713-780-3776 to call in, to text in. Who had the best win in Texas this weekend? Was it Texas over Texas A&M? Was it the Texans over the Jaguars? No. Or was it this win? We'll discuss. Stay put.
ESPN 97.5.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.